It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Couple of quick notes before we get to our guest. Today is Nick Saban's birthday. I say that only because our general manager, Dan Barron, reminded me of it. I know where my bread is buttered. Secondly, they have a flash mob today in Jackson Square, the 13th annual thriller flash mob. But rehearsals started on September 7th, so I'm wondering if it's the 13th annual and it started on, they've been rehearsing since September, is it really a flash mob? Anyway, be aware of that. We're going to talk about a serious thing here with Eric Nisbet, our guest professor of policy analysis and communications at Northwestern University, about large numbers of Americans saying they're worried about efforts to overturn the election and about violence over the results. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the atmosphere. I think I forget from presidential election to presidential election just how divided it can get, how passionate it can get, and sometimes, quite frankly, how silly it can get, where it's your garbage, no, your garbage, no, your garbage, no, your garbage, which
right.
is really just crazy. Is it worse now than ever, or do we just forget maybe from a cycle how bad it can be?
No, it's, it is pretty bad, and it is, Reuters put out a report, they did an analysis, that political violence, and we're talking about like everyday political violence. We're not talking about assassination attempts, which are extreme versions of it. But everyday political violence, fights, altercations between different political supporters, damaging property, et cetera, is at its highest since the early 1970s in this election cycle. So we're seeing political violence breaking out sort of every day among average citizens, which is very troublesome.
I've seen signs in my neighborhood which surprised me, really, because the tone of them, I'll put it that way, and I could see where, if you want to put up a sign, first of all, in Louisiana, which is probably you can cheerlead if you want, but because of the electoral vote and the way it works, Louisiana is solid red, so you can either support your guy or your woman, whomever, I don't mean that negatively either way. But it was just the tone of it that was just particularly ugly, and it surprised me that it would come from this neighbor or the people in this neighborhood. And why does it get so personal? Why is it not about ideology or ideas, but why is it about name-calling one or the other?
Well, it's very tied up into our sort of scientists like myself call political sectarianism. We become very tribal about our political identity, where more and more our political identity defines who we are versus we defining the political identity, right? So we subsume our beliefs, our sense of self into these conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, and where we become sectarians for our side. And thus we see the other side as a threat to who we are. It becomes very personal to us, very emotional. The other side of the equation is rhetoric. The research on political violence shows that dehumanization of the other side and the idea that you are morally superior and thus any violent action against the other side is morally justified, that you still can be a good person while engaging in violent acts. So these sort of factors are leading to the environment you see, and the signs you see is actually contributing to political violence through that sort of dehumanization and moral justification.
I know, you know, from my college sociology, and be careful, Professor, I don't want to hurt myself here, but when it comes to dehumanization, that happens in war where, you know, you dehumanize the enemy where they become, and I don't want to get in any trouble here, but they become nips and they become krauts, and you dehumanize right. them to make them the enemy, which in a situation of war, I can understand that. But here we're talking about fellow Americans, right?
We are talking about fellow Americans, but this is the problem. This is the scary part where we are not defined by our being fellow Americans, our shared cultural and heritage and history and identity as Americans. We're becoming more and more defined by which political tribe you belong to. And so that is where sort of the political sectarianism comes in, where that even overcomes our sort of shared identity we all have here in the United States.
Is there a point as a political scientist that you can go back and say, okay, well, at this point, I'm a Republican, you're a Democrat, and look, this movie, as a matter of fact, it's Halloween, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The Day the Earth Stood Still from the 50s. They're having a mm-hmm. conversation at the dinner table.
Right.
And at one point, they're talking about invasion. And he said, well, I thought the Democrats had already invaded Washington. And I'm paraphrasing that. The point I'm making is we think that political contention in this country is new, when in fact it's not. It's been going on for a long, long time. But I think the difference is now it seems as though not only am I against the other party, but if you're a member of that other party, then I'm against you as well. You understand what I'm trying to ask you?
Yes, and it has gotten worse. I mean, yes, we've always had political differences. We've always had political violence. One of the things that is concerning to people, though, that this political violence previous in the United States was often not necessarily aligned with one political party or the other. It wasn't partisan. It was more diffused. It was about fringe ideas or fringe groups either on the left or the right. Nowadays, though, political violence is becoming more defined by our partisan identities, and that's what's most troublesome, this sort of partisan violence, driven violence, based upon whether a Democrat or Republican. You know, polarization in the United States has become worse in the last 20, 30 years, and you see it in the polling, you see it in the elections, you see it in our media environment. And there's a bit of a chicken or the egg, right? Is our media driving polarization, or are we simply, you know, deciding to tune into more polarized media? And the question is, yes, really, you know, it's sort of this feedback loop. As we immerse ourselves in more homogeneous areas, there's an article even in New York Times yesterday about how people are now living in neighborhoods based upon whether they're Republican or Democrat, right? We're becoming even more geographically separated. We don't even interact with each other in person, right? As we go into these little enclaves, that actually further reinforces the underlying drivers of political polarization and leads to the problem we have today.
If you watch Fox News, if you watch MSNBC, and I don't know the others, I'm just picking out the big two, and I can imagine mm-hmm. if you sit in that echo chamber day after day after day and are glued to this, I could see where it could make you feel as though if that's all you listen to, that's all you watch, and one thing feeding upon the other, upon the other, upon the other, as though it's almost up to you individually to save this country, and that the other side is, in fact, the enemy that's trying to topple America as we know it. Is that an overstatement?
Well, I would not say it's an overstatement into this fact that, you know, relying on partisan media unto itself is not a bad thing. Part of it is the responsibility of how the partisan media talks about the other side, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if MSNBC and Fox News didn't use such dehumanizing language, if they didn't also talk about this being like a struggle of good versus evil, threats to America, to democracy, whether it's accurate or not, you know, the language matters that partisan media use. So there are other countries that have a much more even polarized media environment than we do. But the difference is that they might not using the same level of language that basically creates sort of furthers this political sectarianism.
I know you make a difference between you have expressed the difference between political violence and partisan violence. Drill down on it a little bit, if you would, Professor.
Right. So political violence is someone, you know, is motivated by an extreme ideology. For example, green, and they're destroying, you know, property to save the environment, or they're motivated by white nationalism or anti-Semitism, for example. You know, extreme ideologies that are not formalized as saying being Democrat or Republican. But partisan violence is when you are actually engaging in violence because the other political party you see as a threat, you think they overturned the election, and it's basically to advance the political goals and dominance of your specific political party. So, you know, in our United States, political parties are often manifestations of different ideologies that we campaign on. They're formalized. And when violence becomes a means to decide political questions by our political parties instead of the ballot box or legislative means, that means democracy is breaking down.
As far as political, from the political science standpoint, the study of this, can this be linked back to 24-hour news work networks and cable news and electronic media where there's little to no vetting and you know, there's an audience to be attracted with this rhetoric, sometimes insane, on both sides? And as a result, you know, like, I don't know if Rupert Murdoch, for example, even cares about the politics. I don't know if he's more concerned about money than he is anything. And I'm just wondering if that's not come at a price of maybe division and, I hate to say destruction of America, but a decline in American relations?
There's a big debate in political science and among communication scholars about really what role the media has played, cable news, social media, for example, in driving political polarization and political violence. It's hard because to actually isolate from like a causal scientific the direction of that relationship. You know, my perspective that it's more of like a reinforcing spiral, that there are underlying social, economic, political, cultural factors that are driving polarization in the United States over time, and also political violence, while at the same time, media and our media environment has become more polarized in response to those drivers, but then reinforces and amplifies it, right? So it's too simplistic to say it's just the media or this other sort of sociological factors. It's really the interaction of the two where they're feeding off each other, where it's becoming more and more problematic over time.
Is there any way to say that this is about follow the money? It's all about profit and bankroll, or is it about ideology?
Well, you know, I think what we see here, especially with the rise of these partisan media outlets, it's a combination of both. They see a market, right? Fox News, you know, Robert Murdoch wants to make money. He saw a market for promoting this conservative 24-hour news cycle of the United States. While at the same time, while they're marketing it, they're also trying to grow their audience. And they also have to, you know, from a marketplace, follow the money. You know, the rise of competitors like Newsmax and others who are even further right than Fox News. Fox News is worried about losing its conservative right-leaning market share. So it almost has to move further right to compete against them.
Which means Newsmax then does what?
Newsmax then moves further. So it's sort of like this, unfortunately, very sort of vicious cycle where more and more you sort of try to out-extreme each other to make sure you're capturing the market that you want. Because you, at the end of the day, you are, though you have a conservative mission, at the end of the day, you're trying to make money.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking with Eric Nesbitt, professor of policy analysis and communications at Northwestern University. And I'll ask you on the Oakenhart Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870, are you concerned about political violence? Are you concerned about efforts to overturn the election? Are you concerned about what happens after next Tuesday? Because now I've kind of moved on in my own personal way of this. I think everybody's pretty well made up their mind. My concern now is what does indeed happen after next Tuesday, and we'll talk with the professor about that as well and take your questions at 504-260-1870. 923, Tommy Tucker, back in a flash, WWL.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
9:28, talking about the threat of political violence in this country. Eric Nisbet, our guest, professor of policy and analyst. I'll say it again. Policy analyst and, am I saying that right? Analysis and communications at Northwestern University. It's been a long day, professor. Let's talk about perception and reality. Does there really have to be any election interference for violence to occur, or is it all about the perception of that happening? And
it's about the perception. I think it's about the perception. There was no election interference in 2020, only perception, and that did lead to mass violence on January 6th, or at least contribute to it. I am very worried about that. I think if there is political violence that's going to break out in the near term in the United States, it is going to be centered around claims of voter or election fraud. And my worry is not so much about lone wolves or like singular actors engaging in violence, though that is tragic and worrisome. I'm worried about collective violence. We have large groups of people engaging in some form of violence, whether it's property destruction or harming others, motivated by false or misleading claims about election fraud.
Do you see it one way or the other, if either way, which side wins or loses, if it's similar consequences?
I think the likelihood of election violence is much higher if Trump loses, and loses in a very close manner. There may be some violence. I mean, there's always the possibility of election violence if Kamala Harris loses amongst her supporters. But if you look at the surveys and the polling, there's a survey today that shows that Trump supporters are much more likely to engage in violence if they perceive the election as being stolen or questions of election integrity than Kamala Harris supporters. So I think it's much more likely to happen on the right than the left.
You are a political scientist. You know the Constitution, the way the government works. I'll just come out and say it, because I got a text about this a couple of months ago that got my attention. And it was somebody texted in. Don't get mad at me. It was just a text that said the person that controls the military controls the country, and that they were concerned about Donald Trump having access to the military. That's just a text I got in. Y'all can disagree with that, agree with it. That's up to you. I'm just repeating the text. The reason I bring it up here is that when it comes to results after the election, it would be different than 2020, because the party that's in power is not the one that was in power last time, right?
That's correct. But the question is, you know, yes, I doubt that it would be a role. I mean, even if there are acts of or mass political violence, I doubt the military be directly involved, unless it is something like the storming of the Capitol we saw on January 6th, and then maybe the National Guard would be called out like it wasn't on January 6th to restore order. More likely, it's, you know, there are laws about the military engaging a type of law enforcement with the United States. So more likely it'd be a law enforcement question. And, you know, I think you can safe to say that's unlikely that Kamala Harris or Biden would call on the military to, like, remain in power or some other act if they lost the election. You know, what I think is more worrisome from a constitutional perspective is that, you know, it's really at the state level that we rely on certification of the vote, and whether in the battleground states you have partisan actors involved in that certification that somehow delay it or circumvent it based upon free and fair results. And the other question is then what happens in Congress in terms of certification of the results? Do we have Congress accepting the results of the election that had been certified by the states? So I think there is still some questions, depending on the outcome and how close it is, on different points where politics could derail what is otherwise a free and fair election.
What happens if Donald Trump loses from here and the whole MAGA movement?
Well, I think the MAGA movement and Donald Trump supporters will be furious and unwilling to accept the results, no matter how much evidence is provided. Unfortunately, the narrative from 2020 that the election was stolen and Biden is not legitimate has become a very strong narrative among Republicans. About a third of Americans basically believe that the 2020 election was stolen. And a large percentage of the majority of Republicans endorse that view as well. So really, it's fertile ground. They've seeded the ground for election claims of fraud in 2024. They've been doing this for years now. They've been doing it online already with claims about election fraud or ballots, for example, in Pennsylvania, or election irregularities, which are false or misleading, which have gone viral. So unfortunately, the stage is set for Trump and his supporters to, if they lose the election of free and fair, to use this narratives and misinformation, disinformation to challenge the election across multiple fronts.
I hate to make this comparison, but, you know, I know what I saw in the Capitol, and I've not revised what I thought saw happen on January 6th since then. I know what I saw, and I know what I believe. I think it was akin to the 9/11 hijackings in that it was an opportunity and a weakness that was sensed and for whatever reason was acted upon. I don't see anything, for those that are worried, I don't see anything like that happening again. Do you?
Another January 6th?
Yeah, because it would seem as though they would be prepared this time.
I would hope so. I doubt. There might be more violence at the state level, state capitals, election officials, but we will see. I think they'll be more prepared, definitely, depending on the outcome. If, you know, they'll see it coming. Let's put it that way. This time. So to be more prepared.
As a voice of reason, what would you just leave us, the audience, with as a thought?
My voice of reason is be very critical and skeptical of claims of voter fraud. The research and data shows that voter fraud, election irregularities, it is incredibly rare. Illegal voting is incredibly rare. Election officials have been preparing for years for this election, and instead of relying on social media or claims from partisan actors, trust that the election officials, election authorities, and the mainstream media, you know, credible authoritative sources, will have the best information possible about the state of the election.
All right. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again. Professor Eric Nisbet, Professor of Policy Analysis and Communications at Northwestern University. We come back. We'll talk to Cynthia Lee Sheng on this Halloween morning about Jefferson Parish making upgrades for the Super Bowl and Bicentennial in 2025, 9:36, 24 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:42, 18 till 9. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Jefferson Parish President Cynthia Lee Sheng. How are you, Madam President?
I'm doing very well this morning.
You all right?
Yeah. I'm fine.
Well, you sound like you're not being held hostage or anything, are you? If something's wrong, just say something like the cranberry sauce is cold or something.
Fine.
You sure? Everything's all right with the cranberry sauce?
Fine. Yes, everything's fine with the cranberry sauce.
Okay, because if not, you know, that's all you got to do is tell us. Because I know the sheriff, former sheriff. I know the current sheriff.
I know a couple sheriffs, too.
Hook you up, man. Not to mention you had one in your family.
Exactly.
Before we get to this, tell me about Halloween as a kid. Did you love Halloween or hate it?
I did love Halloween, and it's one of my favorite memories. My mother made me, I'm showing my age here, Tommy, but I Dream of Jeannie, and it was just the best costume, and my mom made it for me, and I loved it. And that's whenever I think of Halloween as a kid, it was when my mom made that hot I Dream of Jeannie costume for me.
Can I tell a parish president this without getting in trouble, that I'll bet you were just cute as all get out?
It was adorable. She had my hair up in that big ponytail. She had something plastic in my hair, like, you know, Barbara Eden had some wrap around the ponytail, and it was just the puppy pants, and oh my gosh. And I'm sure in my mom's house somewhere that costume's around. It might be like moth eaten or whatever, but I'm sure we wouldn't have thrown it away.
Now,
it was like a beloved possession of mine as a child.
On Bewitched, she had an evil twin named Sabrina, right?
Yes,
but did you know that Jeannie's evil twin did not have a name? And I got that directly from Barbara Eden, having interviewed her one time.
They both were, didn't they both have evil twins that were brunettes and they were blonde?
They did,
that's
they
my
did.
Memory.
But,
yes,
but
yes,
Barbara
yes,
Eden
yes.
told me personally that her evil twin did not have a name, unlike Sabrina on Bewitched. So there you go.
Okay, okay. Well, my dad bought me tickets to see Barbara Eden at the Blue Room when I was a little girl, and he kept prepping me, like, you know, she's not going to be I Dream of Jeannie. She's a singer, and he took me as a kid to the Blue Room to see I Dream of Jeannie, to see Barbara Eden. So great childhood memories, Tommy. Thank
act?
You for that.
What did she do?
Sing? It was great. It was she was a singer. Yeah. Her real she was a singer, and she performed, I guess, in her prior career, and then she got the I Dream of Jeannie gig, so.
Let's talk about
beautiful lady.
Yeah, and not to mention a Blue Room that used to be. And we don't mean to go down memory lane here or anything, but boy, it's
right.
Too bad they can't bring that back. Is like a place to bring in.
I guess
there's no money in doing small intimate acts anymore. Like, you know, you can't imagine.
Yeah, but how
Swift
fun if they brought something like that back.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about what's going on with upgrades Jefferson Parish for the Super Bowl that's coming up.
Yeah, so, you know, we're part of this. The Super Bowl, it's obviously in New Orleans, but it's a regional thing. It's a state. It's great for our whole state. And in Jefferson Parish, everybody who flies into the airport and drives downtown comes through Jefferson. So we are upgrading, and this is something that we needed to do. It's just such a massive capital project, upgrading all the lights from, you know, Kenner all the way to New Orleans to make sure we look the best that we can, all the LED lights on I-10. On that roadway to the Super Bowl. So it's a big project. We're scheduled to finish by the end of the year. We gave ourselves a little wiggle room, so that'll be done. And that's, you know, we're in lots of ways working with the Super Bowl. We have a lot of our personnel on a lot of teams, on a lot of committees to help. And, you know, our sheriff, I know he went he was on like a pre-team to the former Super Bowl in terms of like a transition for security and police. And, you know, we're supporting it in a lot of ways. And it's really, really exciting for us. And we know how important this is to all of our economies. We just saw that with Taylor Swift and the amount of, you know, economic churning and that was happening there with our hotel rooms and our restaurants and, you know, our shopping here in Jefferson Parish. So it's critical for us.
Somebody texted in and wanted to know about the possibility of the UEP Long Bridge eventually, and I know it's a state bridge and all that stuff, but Orleans Parish here at the Crescent City Connection, I think, takes on the maintenance of the lights and so forth, if I got that right. The possibility of the UEP Long Bridge being lit up like the Crescent City Connection is. Have there been any discussions?
Yeah, I mean, we've looked at it even for this Super Bowl. We wanted to do some things, but it's just the money. But I would love that idea. I think it's just beautiful. And a bridge being lit up at night is just gorgeous. So I think that's another project that we'll have to look at in the future, Tommy. It's a great idea.
So it was not mine, but it is on the table. Y'all are thinking about something?
No,
like
not for the Super Bowl. No. But I think
eventually?
It would be a great idea.
I think it's
something that's, it's a state, you know, it is a state bridge, but I think it's something that we should be looking at. I love it.
Also, the bicentennial's coming up. Tell me what's planned with that.
So bicentennial is literally 2 days after the Super Bowl, February 11th, 2025. Jefferson Parish is going to be 200 years old. And I always say, if I had any vision for us celebrating, you know, our bicentennial, and I said this at the State of the Parish, let's go backwards. What I don't want is like some formal government, you know, kind of meeting or, you know, celebration. No, we want this to be a celebration for everybody, every business, every family, every nonprofit, every church group. to all of the people who made Jefferson Parish what it is as we celebrate our birthday. So we're going to have celebrations all year long. I hope this is a positive for our economy. I've told restaurants, better start thinking about your bicentennial dish. What are you going to have? Let's get people pop into all of our restaurants, gift shops. With the logo is available for our businesses to put it on coffee cups and aprons and T-shirts. So let's have fun with it. We have a lot of programming. We're going to have, and we think Councilman Walker came up with something in his office. They just did some research. We believe we're the king capital of the world. We want to hype that. We have a bicentennial ball at the Jefferson community. Yeah, we really
awesome.
Do. Yeah, most of the bakeries are, in Jefferson Parish. The Jefferson Community Foundation is hosting a bicentennial ball at Lakeside Mall. How fun to shut down Lakeside Mall and have a big party at night. Mm-hmm. We're all looking forward to that. And, some races, and we have some surprises left, but there's several committees going on right now, not just government committees, a lot of people from the community serving on committees. And we need to recognize our history, too. We had some terrible things happen to us. We had that plane crash. We had, so we're going to make it historically, interesting, but also have fun, and also hopefully it'll help our economy.
Tell me about these posters.
Very grassroots.
I love this poster. This is awesome. I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
We unveiled that poster yesterday, obviously, Becky Foss, and TransDev purchased it, commissioned her and donated that to us. And it was just, it's just beautiful. And Becky was just beaming, and we're so honored. I'm so honored that she would do that. TransDev donated it to us. But it's just a beautiful, poster. If you go from the left side, it's like almost a swamp. That's what we are in Jefferson Parish. We're swampland and alligator country, but we're business and we're residential and industry, and it's a very diverse parish in our economy, in the land that we have, in our people. And I think she captured it very well. How do you capture all of that on, just that, space that she has? But she did it very well. Her use of colors is just magical. And I think I got number 200, so I'm already getting mine framed for my office.
Are they still available or not if somebody wants one like me?
Yes. If you go to the Jefferson Chamber, they're distributing it for us. You can get a signed copy. And then also, you don't have to get a signed copy. You can get just a regular poster. So that's a great – the reason why we unveiled it is because if people wanted to give it as a Christmas gift, I think it's a great Christmas gift to give. And we don't want to do our celebrations until next year, but we did want to unveil the poster a little early. It's just beautiful.
I wanted to ask you, because I know you got to go in a couple of minutes. I know the canals are an ongoing concern of yours, especially when it rains. It hadn't rained in 26 days, but I know you took on parks and recreation, right, and pickleball courts, which, guess what, Jefferson Parish reimagined. Now people are loving it. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for remembering that. Yeah.
So what's next on your plate, I guess? Is it something with canals, or what do you hope to accomplish before your term runs out?
Oh, so it's the canal. That canals is one project where we're going to build a lot of trees and shrubbery on areas of the canal that have the right-of-way. It'll serve as a visual barrier, so maybe cars won't drive into the canal like a vertical barrier. But also, it makes the parish look beautiful. So we looked at 18 locations where we have enough right-of-way, and we want to do a lot of tree planting and stuff like that. There's so many things that we're doing. You have these projects like water and sewer upgrades and recreation reimagine that just span years, right? And you're doing a little bit more on every year, but there's all kind of other projects we're doing. We have, this is more inside ball, but we're replacing an old financial system that we've had for 30 years. We're replacing that. That's a multi-year project. We hope to get really far this next year. And our public information office is going to have a television studio that we're going to open next year. And for emergency management, that's my passion. We have new software that we're being trained on. So there's tons of stuff that we get kind of done every year. And then there's these other projects that span, like the water and sewer upgrades. That's a 20-year project, a lot of things going on through the parish, but it's always busy. And we just hope that there's no more emergencies and we can concentrate on these fun things and these innovative projects.
Let me put this in your ear. You know what your legacy should be? Lighten up that UEP Long Bridge.
Okay.
What do you
All
think?
Right. I
like
got it.
Yeah.
I got it. We got to start. Only have 3 years left. We got to start.
There you go. You got a minute left. Tell me about trick-or-treating tonight. What you want people of Jefferson Parish to know?
I just want everybody to be safe. Look, this is, you know, put those little, what do you call it, the neon light, things on your children.
Light sticks,
and everybody
glow
needs
things,
the,
whatever they
the
are.
Light sticks and glow sticks. And let's just have that. This is a cherished memory. I mean, we started this interview like that, but we, like everything, we want to get through being safe. And so, you know, I love it. You know, I hope. At my house, it's kind of funny. Sometimes, some years we get like a little bit of kids, and some years we just get a lot. So I'll be curious to see what happens at my house tonight. But this is a great night for everybody, but we just need to get through very safe. That's all.
Just slow down when you're going home, man. No speeding. I was very protective when my kid was younger, and I stopped somebody and knocked on the window and asked them what the hell they were doing, and come to find out it was somebody that lived right next door to me with kids hurrying home to trick or treat. So there you go. Thank you, President.
Good message.
Cynthia Lee Sheng, good to talk to you. You bet. Madam President Cynthia Lee Sheng, we'll take a break, come back, find out what Newell Norman's got planned for us today here on WWL.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.